cliffcentral.com.
Well, Wednesday's rolled around again. Happy hump day to everybody out there. I'm Sharon Dale, and I'm here with my co-host, Jonathan Sinclair, and we are Animal Central.
Hello, Sharon.
It's a good day today.
Yes, it's a good day.
It's a good day. I'm enjoying
life at the
moment.
Always my favorite show when we bring animals in studio.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and we've got some interesting ones alive and stuffed in studio today.
Yes.
Let's call it that. But before we start, you know, it's because it's Cliff Central's birthday on the 1st of May, mm-hmm. we've been doing these amazing giveaways of Samsung Galaxy S4s. In the last show, Rookies and Rockstars, Tsego Fatsu Talker won the phone, so they'll be getting hold of him shortly. And if you're listening now and you would like an awesome Samsung Galaxy S4, all you need to do is listen out for the question on our show. It's coming up next. Then you submit your answer on WeChat. You just simply tap connect, then competition on the menu. So if you want an upgrade or need a brand new smartphone, we'll then hook you up with a Samsung Galaxy S4. Win with Cliff Central and WeChat for this whole month of April. You can also visit cliffcentral.com for the details. Now, the question today, a little bit of a tricky one. The question is, what time is the Konza show? Mm-hmm. So all you have to do, get onto WeChat, let us know what time is the Konza show, and is it the first person that sends in that wins?
They do select the correct answers randomly.
Okay,
but
cool.
You do stand a good chance. It is on a Friday, so if you want to check it out on the website, and then you can go see what time the Konza show is.
Yes.
It's hosted by Andrew Levy. So, yeah,
fantastic. So get onto your WeChat, and yeah, let's see if we can hook you up with a Samsung Galaxy S4. I'd love one.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be honest.
Pretty
awesome
weak
phones.
Answer.
I know. But coming up today, we've got Erica Verkale, who's the manager of the Animal Ethics Unit at the NSPCA. Thanks, Erica, for coming in today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
It's been very interesting because, Erica, let me try and paint the picture for people who can't see. Erica came in with this massive bag with what looked
to be... She called it a body bag.
A body bag. And it looked to be a real dog in there, but it's actually an anatomically correct stuffed dog called Jerry.
Yes.
And yes.
Jerry. He came to visit. He's our mascot. Very sexy dude. Everyone loves Jerry, as you can see from the reactions that I got.
He's beautiful. I think a lot of people in the studio were quite worried because they thought it was a baboon.
Well,
what was in there?
One member of staff, we won't mention names, thought that it was a baboon.
A baboon, yes. So now, Erica, why is Jerry here? What do you do?
Okay, so in the Animal Ethics Unit, our focus is to basically replace the use of animals for unnecessary research or unnecessary use in education and teaching. And Jerry is here because he's a replacement or aiding model for training and teaching people who need to draw blood, listen to heart and lung sounds, train on handling animals and things like that.
Yes.
So that is Jerry's main purpose.
So what do they normally do when in these teaching schools or in veterinary school? Do they use live animals?
They do use live animals, but there's a big shift towards using alternatives. Mm. Internationally, you will see that it's grown. The focus of alternatives has grown with ethics in animals.
Yes.
So there's a huge mind shift change, and people prefer using animals before they actually you call it partial replacement.
Right.
You're not going to replace using an animal because you, especially if you study veterinary or you're an animal inspector, you would eventually need to work on an animal. But this is just to ease your nerves, get used to handling an animal, get used to handling injections and needles and things like that, where to find a vein, you know, what makes you comfortable when you work with animals.
Yes.
So
yes, and in the 5 minutes I spent with you showing, it's incredible. You can feel Jerry's heartbeat, you can feel where the veins are, his ribs, everything is there.
It's very real, and that's why it works.
Yes.
But unfortunately, there's not a lot of people that actually knows about alternatives and things like that, because it's fairly new in South Africa, and it's very expensive to import.
unfortunately. So all of these have to be imported at this point.
At the moment, yes.
Okay, because he's life size. He's probably about
as big as a body bag.
Yeah, Polly. Yes, he's quite a big guy. Mm. And then you also brought, I don't know what his name is. We've got a frog lying here, and not a real frog, a plastic frog.
Yes.
For the same reason, and then we've got a rat.
Yeah, this is our dissection kit. So we basically started our own alternatives library. Because we want to promote things like alternatives to schools and universities.
I think that's when you get to grade 11, you start dissecting the frog and the rat, and you actually get actual rats, which...
Are they live?
No. They are. They're frozen, and then the teacher sort of just gives them to you.
Didn't do science, so thank goodness.
We did it in biology, and it was optional. You could come over the weekend to do it. Yes. But still, it's kind of hectic, though. I mean, it's an actual thing that lived. So.
Yeah,
I think this is a much better idea because you see all the organs, and I think you can see them more clearly than in the actual body.
Oh, there's a lot of benefits to something like this because when you dissect a rat and you do it wrong, your whole specimen is gone. You can't go back and learn again. Mm. As with these models, and also you get DVD simulation programs that works very well. You can go back and you can learn about the organs and the functions and how everything works again over and over again.
So there's room to make mistakes.
Yes, definitely. And it always obviously takes the gross factor out, and it takes things like conservation issues out.
Absolutely.
And ethical issues. And we do get complaints about students that they don't want to do it, but they're forced to sort of do it. They don't all have a choice.
Yeah.
So, you know, we understand that some dissections need to be done in later in life when you know what your career path is going to be.
Yes.
But why do it in first year when
you're not going to specialize?
Exactly. And half the first year classes drop out. So why did you actually...
need to do that. I know my niece was quite horrified. It was in her first year when she had to dissect a hardy dog.
Which was quite
horrible for her.
Yeah.
But as you say, at some point, if you are going to now specialize in veterinary science, then you're going to have to work on
you're going to have to get over your
deceased animals.
Yes. There are universities overseas that's completely moved away from animals altogether. So it is a trend, and it is something that's moving fast to South Africa. But at the moment, we still do a lot of animal work.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to post, we'll take a picture of us with Jerry a little bit later. But now, tell me, I don't know if you work with this, Erica. I've seen in the news a lot this week about beagle rescue, the beagles that are being rescued from these places that experiment on them. Do you work with that as well?
As far as I know, and we are involved with about 40 animal ethics committees around the country, there's only one or two places that use beagles for teaching purposes mainly.
Yes.
And the use of dogs is minute in comparison with the rest of the research animals that they use.
What are they using?
It depends on what they want to do. Mm. So if it is something like tick and flea products where you have to use the animal species that your target species,
right,
then safety and toxicity and things like that needs to be tested. But animal research in general is very much focused on biomedical research. So it's using animals for the benefit of humans.
Mm. Yes, yes.
You do get, obviously, there's a large amount of animal research is being done on animals for the benefit of animals.
Mm.
But they all have their place, and universities focus on different areas.
Yes. No, well, I'm seeing here, we just got a message in from Brad, and he says, we have similar practice dummies when I was studying to be a paramedic. The dummy has heart sounds, pulses, veins, and you can attach an ECG and get heart rhythms. So, that's fascinating that you can learn. I learned now where to find my dog's pulse. It's that easy, which you wouldn't know otherwise.
Absolutely.
Now, going back to experimenting on animals, is that something that the NSPCA also keeps an eye on?
Our unit, apart from the alternatives, we also focus on guys like university and non-university institutions doing research on animals. So
yes.
In order to do research, you need animal ethics approval from a committee, an animal ethics committee. And what happens is there's a certain amount of people that needs to be on an animal ethics committee. Like you need a vet and a scientist and a welfarist and a lay public member. And where we play a big role is that we're actually serving as the animal welfare watch dog, if you can put it like that. Mm. So we look at exactly what they want to do with the animals, where they're keeping the animals. We do inspections at the facilities. And you basically dissect the protocol to see what they want to do. You need to have a knowledge about research animals. You need to know exactly what they're talking about, what procedures are acceptable and what's not acceptable. Mm. So there's a fair amount of knowledge that you need to know on the subject before you can, you know, comment on something like that.
Sure. I mean, I wish there was alternative. I've seen alternatives. I've seen the images where they test cosmetic products and hair dyes and everything, and they literally squirt these things into rabbits' eyes. It's horrific, and these animals are in cages. That's all they do. And I've seen a lot of, you know, a beagle rescue in the USA. Their main task is to go there and free these dogs. And they've never seen the sun. They've never had feet on grass. They've never had a normal life.
I can honestly tell you that that's not exactly the situation in South Africa.
Is it not? No. That's
good to hear. The photos and things that you see is mainly from overseas.
Yes,
and
it's very
old.
Say.
A lot of those pictures are really old. Mm-hmm. And cosmetics, as far as we know, they don't test cosmetics in South Africa.
No.
They might use the ingredients that has been tested overseas somewhere. Yes. But it's not exactly.
No, I don't think so. I mean, the big brands that do test.
But I mean,
it's not
those
here.
Big brands are getting imported anyway. So
somewhere
they've been tested on animals.
Yeah.
So the safest thing to do is when you use your own cosmetics and hair products and things like that, is to make sure on the label that it hasn't been tested on animals.
Yes, or it's beauty without cruelty. Now, Arno is here, our resident herpetologist. Arno, you wanted to jump in here.
We're busy doing research on people's blood after they've been bitten by snakes to determine if you can draw blood to determine which snake it is, how much has injected into them, and do they need anti-venom or not.
Yes.
Which will save millions and millions of rands, and it'll save many
lives.
And what we're using for that is we're using snakes from specific localities. So when we get a problem, puff adder, for example, we'll milk the puff adder and we'll let him go because he's done his job and he's got to go back. Just to be able to milk that puff adder so we can use it on blood, we have to get ethics approval for that. So it is for
anything,
whether we're using it on animals or humans. Obviously, we're working on humans because that is what we just for that, we need to get ethics approval.
But that's fantastic.
So it is at every level. And these people are serious about it. I mean, this is at the University of Pretoria. These guys are serious, and they said, don't have ethics approval, we don't do it. And I said, you know, where are you getting the snakes? I said, they're problem snakes. And they said, well, we're going to have to discuss that. And it's just catch a snake, milk it, release it.
Yeah, yes. I like that.
That is good news.
It doesn't
news.
Have to live its whole life in captivity.
Right. Awesome. That is excellent news that we're actually doing something about it.
It's very regulated. Research, you know, monitoring, especially at your big universities. They make a big point of using the SANS code. It's a standard that's for research animals, and they use it as their own law within the universities. So they have to follow it, and they need to know exactly where the animals come from, what procedures you're going to do on them, how you're going to release, where you can, is it feasible to release an animal again. You know, all those type of aspects gets, like I said, dissected on a committee.
I wonder if it's better, though, if you're testing for products that are for the animals. So if you're doing tick and flea testing, I mean, that should be ethical because it's for the dogs. But then I wonder who gives their dog up to be tested, or are those dogs just, they don't actually have a home, they're just testing dogs?
If it's in that situation, they have a breeding colony. Mm. Breeding colonies, generally, as far as we know, are kept under very good conditions. Mm. And they, you know, they have running pens and they have place to play and
but it's
all
not
those
like they have a family or anything. They just they live in the testing facility their whole lives and...
Look, I guess, you know, it's such a controversial subject because these dogs have possibly allowed for my dogs to be vaccinated and to live longer lives.
Yeah.
Correct. It's so controversial.
Another thing you need to bear in mind is that those animals need to be in pristine condition. If you have a dog that's slightly sick and you put, for example, flea powder on him and he gets sick and dies, you think it's because of flea powder, but it's because the dog wasn't being looked after. To have a dog that, for example, is used to humans playing with him and running around and all that, so they socialize with each other, socialize with people as well. I've I've seen some of these places and I've looked there, and I've, funny enough, there were a couple of beagles involved, and these animals seem to be fairly healthy, happy animals, because you have a sickly animal, it, automatically they pull it, yeah. And genetically it's got to be perfect, otherwise we get the wrong results.
So it's in their best interest to keep the animals healthy, yes. Otherwise their product is not going to get
approved. Well-fed,
yes. And these guys keep pressure on them to make sure that everything goes well.
But it's such good, I really can't get such good news that we actually don't have all these horrible facilities that you see in the USA. I think, you know, maybe some of the images are old, but I know there's currently this group that goes around and rescues these beagles from these facilities. And some of the videos, it's just, it makes you want to cry.
It's very unfortunate because people think it happens all over the world. You know, yes. You know, you can't really judge what's happening in other countries.
Yes.
Just to say that same is happening in South Africa.
So do you work closely with varsities and places like Onderstepoort
as
well?
Yes, very close, yeah. Like I said, we serve on animal ethics committees all over the country. We on 40 animal ethics committees, non-university and university ethics committees. So, yeah.
Because I guess, you know, like you said, Jerry, for the beginner, for first year, maybe second year. But then going forward to third year, where you do actually have to work on a real animal. Mm-hmm. Where do these frogs and these rats and that, where do they come from?
It is a problem because we keep on discovering that although you are involved with universities and things like that, you keep on discovering that there's certain departments that don't really go through ethics approval before they do dissections and things like that yet. And some of the times that they use breeding animals, especially rats.
So they breed themselves. Yeah.
But then there are places that, especially schools, we have no idea where they get them from.
Okay.
And that's a problem.
I know you can actually go, as vulgar as it sounds, to the butcher and get things like this, like rats.
That's ideal, actually.
And a frog, for
from
instance.
From a butcher?
Yeah. I know.
Seriously?
My biology teacher would go to certain places and just buy the rats frozen. And it's very sort of humane in the way that they're packaged. I mean, you don't just buy the rats. It's like comes in a package.
Oh, my word.
No, they were lying to you. A butcher's not allowed to deal in any animal which still has its skin on, especially not rodents. Otherwise, they'd lose their license for the butchery. So probably it just the butcher happened to know somebody. But there are people who produce these animals on a large scale. Frogs are protected. You're not allowed to do that with frogs whatsoever in South Africa. Not even.
So if you're dissecting a frog, it's illegal.
Guaranteed it's illegal. They were collected illegally. You're not allowed to do it. That's a lot of the time what they get from the butchers is they get a heart or a liver or something. And I remember cutting those up.
I
never remember cutting open a whole body. But I'm still old school. We used to get our dead animals from the SPCA. In those days, they used to give us euthanized animals. And that's what we would use.
Oh,
and
okay.
Obviously the SPCA got upset and then stopped that.
Yes.
Because we each of us had a project. We had to make a skeleton. And everyone would go to the SPCA and get a cat or a dog and make the skeleton.
Oh,
and luckily that has stopped because it was horrific. These people were having nightmares. And things have changed. But yeah, some of the people do still breed them. And then obviously a lot of the research is done on animals which are brought in by people who can't afford the operation. So if an animal comes in and it's got a broken leg, they can get a class together, fix the leg, everybody learns, and the dog goes home to an owner.
Right,
so that
right.
animal doesn't have its leg broken so that they can practice on it.
Yes.
It's actually an animal
open
that was brought
public.
In.
Open to the public. Yes,
and
I've heard of that.
They plan
That's
it.
Wonderful.
For example, at Onderstepoort, they will plan it that on this day, what do we have? And they say, well, we've lined up three surgeries, and they go, we've done those two, let's do that for the students.
Yes, so
they
that's
do
how
it.
They
the dog
learn.
Goes back, and the person gets his dog back healthy. It doesn't cost him anything, and everybody learned out of
yes.
it.
Yes. I suppose rats, you know, talking about rats, you could go to any pet store and buy frozen rats. The moment you know you can but that's I mean is there anything that the public can do to help you with what you're doing?
Well, an awareness, you know, they can let us know if there's any schools in the area that still does dissections, because I mean that's a basic level of where they really really don't need to do dissections. In certain you know, the CAPS module that most of the government schools are using, it actually says that when you use an animal, you need to put it back in the environment where it came from. In other words, you can't do dissections on them.
Right.
And it doesn't say that you need to do dissections on an animal. It does say that you can use alternatives, like getting it from a butchery or, you know, things like that. But the problem is also that they don't give them other alternatives, like, for instance, a rat model,
yes,
or a DVD or a simulation program, for instance. And that's where we come in, because we would like the Department of Education to work with us to distribute things like this.
Absolutely.
And like I said to you earlier, we made our own first 3D printed rat that looks similar to this one.
Yes.
That the organs can also remove, and it's for basic anatomy and learning, and it will be a lot cheaper than importing something like that.
So the options are this little rat here, he's much cheaper for the schools to use that.
This specific one has been imported, okay, just to show them what.
But you've done a 3D printed.
But the 3D one is in the making. It's going to look and feel very real with silicone and things like that. It's going to be normal colors that a normal rat. This is very extreme colors that you can see here.
Yeah,
so it will look a little bit more real. And then, of course, they don't have an excuse because it looks like a real animal. Mm, but they are. I mean, schools have tablets these days.
Yes.
There's apps that you can download where you can dissect frogs on the app. So there are other options.
And they have these interactive smart boards, you know.
Exactly.
So there is no need to buy a real animal.
No, there's no need at all. So if schools are interested, they simply need to get hold of the NSPCA to your division. Animal ethics unit.
Yes, sure.
And they can arrange to get this from you once everything's in place.
Sure.
And I mean, it'll last forever. I mean, they don't have to buy new rats or whatever the case is every year.
Mm. And it doesn't smell funny.
No, and there's no blood.
And I'm sure the students prefer this, eh? Yeah. I know I didn't want to dissect the rat. I didn't want to come on my Saturday, A, and B, I didn't want to dissect the rat.
No, I can imagine. No. I can imagine. But did you want to be a vet? I suppose the guys that want to be vets can't wait to go.
But I think other people, they just really want to know what goes on inside the body of an animal. It is fascinating. Yeah.
If you're getting a heart from a butcher, it's a lot different to getting something like a rat, because that rat could have diseases which can be transferred to how many of the kids. I mean, if the rat was kept under bad conditions, you're looking at things like salmonella, all sorts of ringworm, any other thing, because it's basically a reject rat. That's why it's ended up there. So using silicon like that, I think, is excellent.
It's much safer as well.
It's much safer, and especially some people, also for religious reasons, don't want to kill an animal just because they need to look what's inside it. I don't think
we've
that's
got
necessary.
We've got another question here from Brad, which we're going to come to when we finished speaking to Erica, because it pertains to you, Arno, and the anti-venom production.
Okay.
So we'll get to Brad's question. Stay tuned, Brad. Erica, how can people get hold of you?
They can go to our website, www.nspca.co.za. Or they can contact us. Yeah, that's the best thing to do. You just go to the website.
And how soon will these silicon or whatever, the 3D printed rats be available, do you think?
Well, hopefully before the end of the year already.
Oh, great.
We are working hard on getting it up and running. But in the meantime, there are things like we've got DVDs. Simulation models
that they can
use,
supply.
And we can supply them. Yeah, we can sell them to them.
This is the high schools that we're talking to, the varsities and the colleges.
See, sometimes they have to have a practical lesson. Like they can't just watch the DVD. They actually have to do it practically. So
and
this
that's
would really
ideal.
Come in handy.
Yeah. No, it's ideal. It can be used over and over again, and no rats were hurt in the process.
Exactly.
There we go. Okay. Erica, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem.
And please keep us posted. I hope that we've got some schools listening today.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And we'll actually get hold of you, because I really think it's a fantastic idea. And we'll take a photo of us with Jerry just now to
It might be a bit disturbing, but it's fascinating.
Well, it's the first time we haven't had a real doggy in the studio. But we'll definitely do that. Erica, thanks for all that you do. Much, much appreciated.
Sure.
All right. And then Sharon, just before we go to Arno, I know something that's very big on your heart is pit
bulls. Yes, pit bulls. Very much so. Very, very much so. I love pit bulls. And the Pretoria Pitbull Awareness Walk is coming up now, on the 25th of April.
It's this Saturday.
It's this Saturday. It's going to be amazing. It's at the Riotendale. Is that how you pronounce that?
I read it as Rittendale.
At Rittendale Park, Soutpansberg Road, and it starts at 10 a.m. sharp. So water points will be provided halfway. All breeds are welcome, so not only pit bulls. But please use double leashes and collars, as we don't want any problems if your dog isn't socialized.
Yeah, we don't want some pit bulls getting hold of each other.
No. And important to note that no person under the age of 16 is to be handle a dog on their own. Entrance fee, this is the great news, all the entrants will be going to Underdog South Africa Rehabilitation Center. We actually had Estelle and Jeanette in studio a few months ago, and they do amazing work. That was the pit bull who parked a load in the corner.
Yes, under the Christmas tree.
Under the Christmas tree at the time.
It was wonderful.
So all the proceeds are going to Underdogs. They do such amazing work. They fight against dog fighting. So it is such a worthy cause. For more information, get hold of Mike. He's on 082-470-8780 or Jeanette on 082-761-1155. Very, very important. We'll also post this on my Canine Zone Facebook page later today when I get back to the office. So get there. I'm hopefully going to be there as well. All right. So moving on now to Arno.
Yes.
Let's move on to Arno. Arno has brought two little, we won't say scaly because they're not really scaly, reptilian friends. But now there was a question that someone had sent in.
That. It was Brad.
Because it kind of relates to what Erica was talking about. Brad says, what about anti-venom? Is this made synthetically, or do they still use horses to extract the antibodies for the anti-venom? And my question is this safe for the horses?
Yes, we still use horses. The reason why we use horses is because of the volume. It's a big animal, very easy to draw enough blood that we can do something with it. The other thing is that the horse lives for a very long time. These horses, you know, it's not something that's harmful to the horses. Some of them are 18, 21 years old and they're still quite happy horses. Because it is done in a very controlled way, because we want the best product available.
Yes.
We can also use things like rabbits, but the problem is rabbit doesn't live as long and we get less volume from them. And it's more dangerous for the rabbit to draw that amount of blood that we need.
It's much smaller,
because of its size. They're using sheep in America. They believed that this was fantastic, was going to stop all the allergic reactions that we were getting from the antivenoms, and it actually doesn't work. We're actually having more problems with it. Horses are very good for that. In the Middle East, funny enough, they even use camels, and that's also been very effective. The perfect one would be to use humans, but apparently there's some law that stops us from taking our prison population and testing it on them. But
I would vote for that. Absolutely.
A lot of people would, but the thing is,
people on death row.
You know, human rights have, and all.
Yeah, what about animal rights?
Silly
though?
Little things. But the thing is, unfortunately, with horses, we do have a percentage of the population are, believe it or not, allergic to horses. So they are allergic to the antibodies. And there was talk in India that they were looking at using eggs and inoculating eggs and extracting antibodies. It worked out so expensive that the people in India couldn't afford the antivenom. So they could make it, but nobody could afford it. And that also doesn't help, because you need to get it to the population. Most of the time, the population that are getting bitten are at the lower income groups.
Yes.
You know, these are guys that are in
especially
rural areas.
India.
And guys working in the fields, they don't have. And for them to lose just a limb, not even a life, is 18 people are affected by it. You know, so that's why in South Africa, we try to get it as perfect as possible.
So, Anna, how does it work? So you inject minuscule amounts of venom into the horse.
Right. We've got 10 horses, okay?
Right.
There's a black mamba horse, green mamba horse, Cape Cobra horse, whatever. Each horse is microchipped, and he's primed for a specific venom. We then inject him Monday, Wednesday, Friday for 3 weeks to build up his immunity.
With the pure venom.
With
from
the pure venom,
snake,
but in small enough amounts that it basically doesn't do anything to him. Then we give him what would be a lethal dose for his weight, draw the blood, and that blood then gets taken, put into a centrifuge. They spin it and they take off all the white.
So I want to go back here. A lethal dose?
Yes. We would give him enough, which would normally kill him.
But now he's immune to it.
But because he's immune to it, he doesn't really care. So he's built up the prime number of antibodies. We then take the white blood cells where the antibodies are, and then we put the red blood cells back into the horse and he gets put out to pasture. Those white blood cells.
And it doesn't affect him at all?
No.
No side effects?
If it did, we wouldn't be using them for so many years.
Right.
Then the white blood cells, we put in a big pot. We take a wooden spoon. No, lie. We've got a laboratory. And we mix all 10 horses' antibodies together. That gets purified, put into a vial, and that's what gets injected into
you. So that is a range then. So if you're bitten by a mamba or baboon viper, it's that same antivenom.
You're getting antibodies from all those 10 horses or 10 snakes that have bitten the horse.
Okay.
And that is why we use polyvalent in South Africa, not a monovalent, which you would only need for one snake. So whether it's a Runkel's or a spinning cobra or a snouted cobra, it doesn't matter. Venom. We're going to give you the same medication.
Yes.
And you will probably pull through.
So that would treat whatever snake.
Yep. But and then you'll be fine.
And this antivenom, I mean, is it available freely?
It is available fairly freely, but it shouldn't be. For the sane and simple reason, if you have a major allergic reaction called anaphylaxis, when you inject it, because a person's maybe allergic to the horse, that person's blood pressure is going to drop, he's going to stop breathing, his throat is going to close up, and he's going to die.
So worse than the actual snake bite.
Yes, so you could kill somebody.
Yes, with antivenom.
While you're trying to save them. That's why we prefer that it happens in a hospital situation where we have somebody who has enough experience, hopefully, and can say, look, this is what bit you, or I suspect it's this. Mm. It's gotten to the point where it's not going to resolve itself. Let's give you antivenom.
Yes.
They give you the antivenom, they put it in a drip, they give it to you slowly, and if you have a reaction, they stop it, they inject you with adrenaline, and then they start
it
again slowly.
They can monitor it.
So they can monitor it. To inject yourself in the field, there's a good chance you could die.
So you don't recommend people living on farms or something to have their own kit?
Get to a hospital. I mean, this last weekend I was training 22 doctors up in Nelspruit, specifically in more skills in the treatment of snake bite.
Yes.
And they see a lot of snake bites, and they were all very happy about it. And we seem to be getting somewhere because the doctors don't get enough training during their 7 years. I know because I lecture there.
Mm.
And I don't get enough time to teach them enough about snake bite. So once they've been in the field for a couple of years, then we retrain them, and then those are guys that are interested, and then we get better results.
Okay.
There are people who inject themselves with venom as well. We have a couple, I know of five in South Africa, that inject themselves regularly with mambas and cobras and puff adders. And obviously,
what, to build up an immunity?
They build up their own immunity. Oh. It is completely unethical. It is
horrible.
Oh, yes.
It's not illegal. And these guys, they reckon that they live longer, they have a lot less colds and flu, and that it builds up their immunity and all this. And I've spoken to doctors about it, and there's a better chance that they'll die of cancer than what they will from snake bite. So, yes,
good
even
heavens.
Though we worry about the horses and we think, oh, poor horses, they're people that are doing this willingly, and they say it doesn't really hurt, it's like a bee sting.
But then we should extract their white blood cells.
Yes, why don't
It has actually been done in America. There was a guy by the name of William Hast. He lived to be 102 years old, and he injected himself on a bi-weekly basis with various snake venoms. And in, I think there was 5 cases where people were bitten by snakes and they didn't have antivenom, and they actually drew blood from William, injected it into this person like a blood transfusion, and that person survived the snake bite. So, yes, in a perfect world, we could get people who volunteer.
Yes.
But the problem is then you've got to watch all the other things they do. They're not allowed to drink. They're not allowed to sleep with prostitutes. All the other stuff that we could.
Right.
We don't want those antibodies in that. So it would be very difficult. So if we could isolate a couple of them, like at a prison maybe, and inject them, that would be perfect.
No, sure, sure. Now, Arno, this weekend, my son, his mother is very involved in dog rescue. My son has moved into the snake reptile rescue field. And we decided to go and have a look at the snake expo, or reptile expo that was held this last weekend. Went in there, and I must tell you, this is just a personal opinion, is I was completely gobsmacked at how many venomous snakes were being sold there, including the spitting cobra, which I believe is an indigenous species, and the person selling them, he would sell them to anyone. No questions asked. You had the money, you paid, you got it. We saw cascabel rattlesnakes. We saw eyelash, beautiful. I mean, they're stunning eyelash vipers. And then on top of it, they had cages full of what is that other little guy that you bring, the little rabbit?
Oh, chinchillas.
Chinchillas. Mm. They had thousands of bearded dragons. And I just, although it was great because I met the people from Bearded Dragon Rescue, because so many people are buying bearded dragons. It's a big, big thing right now. But they don't know how to look after them. So these guys end up in rescue.
Right. Oh, we have about 5 issues here.
What are your thoughts?
Yes. Okay, number one, it wasn't a reptile expo. It's an exotic pet expo.
Exotic
there just happened
pet
to be a
expo.
Lot of, yeah, there happened to be a lot of reptiles there. I, for example, arrange a reptile expo in 2 weeks' time, and you will not see chinchillas and tenrecs
really?
And that sort of stuff there. It's a reptile expo. It's completely different. Conditions are different for keeping mammals and birds and things.
Mm.
And you can't I don't like keeping them next to reptiles. It's a reptile, and there'll be obviously spiders and invertebrates,
right.
But it's completely different. The temperatures inside the room are kept different because, for example, I don't want temperatures at 26 degrees if I've got chinchillas, so therefore we don't allow chinchillas. I don't want it at 22 degrees because then the tenrex and the hedgehogs start getting cold. So that's why we don't have mammals there. We don't like it.
Good,
we don't want
good,
little
good.
Birds there.
Yes.
So ours is a reptile expo. That's the difference between
purely
our expo
reptiles.
And the one that you were at. The second thing is when you mentioned the Mozambique spitting cobras, obviously being in the position that I am, I'm against the trade of all indigenous reptiles and anything that's illegal. I did phone around. They were not Mozambique spitting cobras. They were red spitting cobras. They occur north of Mozambique. They're exotic and you are allowed to trade in them.
Oh, you are?
They apparently were brought up from Cape Town. And they were sold here. The nice thing is, if you get bitten by a snake like that, I can still save your life because we use exactly the same antivenom that we have in South Africa covers that species. So it's not that dangerous. If you get bitten by them or the runcuts in your garden, you would have the same problem. Yes, I don't approve of them being sold to anybody. And I find it hard to believe, but it still happens, that somebody would walk into an expo, walk past there and go, hey, I want a rattlesnake.
Yeah, yeah.
The cascabel that was sold, I found out who sold it. The kid that actually sold it is actually working my Python on a film shoot as we speak. And the person that he spoke to who had ordered the cascabel, he keeps rattlesnakes. He specializes in other rattlesnakes, but he's never kept a cascabel.
Okay.
And
okay.
I think you mentioned that he said he had never kept a rattlesnake before.
Yes,
he had never kept a cascabel rattlesnake, which is a little bit different. They're all very similar to keep.
Right.
Although the cascabel needs a slightly higher humidity, and he did know how to look after it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been sold.
Okay.
At our expo, for example, if you sell a venomous snake, the container is sealed. It may not be opened under any circumstances for the entire duration. So there's no chance of someone getting bitten, no one opening it, having it fall over in the car on the way home. They have to be sealed because we work to international standards. I've been to very many international expos, and I know what they do there, and that's what we try to do at Empress Palace at the expo there.
Yes.
As with regards to the chinchillas and that, we just don't approve of it. I don't think it's a good thing to have so many of them together because they generate heat. As you know, my son also specializes in chinchillas. I don't like that sort of thing. That's why we do the reptile side, because the reptiles are more or less we need the same conditions, and it's a lot easier to monitor, and we know what we're doing. We also have a vet that goes through on Saturday morning, and she will inspect all the cages, all the containers, all the animals. And if there's anything that looks dodgy, which have happened in the past, we pull them.
It's as simple as
save the guy those things, thank you, we'll take them. We keep them until the end of the day, and he gets to take them home. But he does not bring them the next day.
Right.
Because we've got to keep up a certain standard.
No, absolutely.
I'm trying to promote the hobby. I'm not trying to make money out of it. I sell a handful of snakes a year, and these guys are making a living out of it. So it's not in my best interest to have them sell something like a bearded dragon to a six-year-old child who takes it home, has spent R1,000 on a cage, abuses the dragon, it dies, or he gives it away. Then he's got a cage, he doesn't know what to do with it, so he buys another dragon.
Right.
That's not the way things work. I mean,
no,
these aren't goldfish.
No,
these are animals.
All.
Like you see this bearded dragon I've got here,
beautiful.
Was sitting on my shoulder.
Yes.
They're lovely to keep if you know what you're doing. If you
correct.
Don't, if you don't research,
more.
If you don't research your animal, then you're an idiot. There are how many of them that are breeders? I would love to see more people sterilized than animals, because some of them should not breed. And unfortunately, they do. So there's some things we can do, some things we can't do. So from our side, we try as far as possible. I mean, for example, if we sell boa constrictors, you get a care sheet with it with a number. If it hasn't eaten within 10 days, phone us. Doesn't help you tell me 3 months later it didn't eat and it died. Because then I'm going to get upset because one of my babies that I sold you.
Right.
So we do hand out care sheets. We do try to educate people.
And they can keep in touch with you if something
goes wrong. I mean, I do husbandry courses. If you don't know enough about reptiles, come. I'm going to take you for 8 hours. I'm going to tell you everything you need to know, and it'll be perfect.
Mm.
But we also have problems at the expo. We had one woman there who complained that the one cage was too hot and there was no water in it. The unfortunate thing is the dab lizards that live in there need a hot spot of 48 degrees.
Whoa.
That is damn
hot.
Number two, if you put in water, they die. They cannot drink water. There are a couple of animals that if you give them water, they die. There's certain snakes that if you give them a water bowl, they will put their head in there and they'll drown. You have to spray them. They never see standing water in their entire life. Now, if you walk around and you don't know that specific animal, you look at this and you go, animal abuse.
Mm. Yes.
But once you know exactly which animal it is,
education.
This is a Cerastes. Cerastes, the Saharan horned viper, they never see standing water. You spray them down, they drink off their body, and that's it.
And that's it.
You give them too much water, they actually overhydrate and they die. So those are the sort of things where we try to teach the public when they buy stuff. And the two expos are not the same. They just happen to be held close to each other,
right.
But it's not
right.
The same thing.
Okay.
I mean, you'll see, for example, ours have got carpets, pipe music, air conditioning, all that sort of stuff. It's not quite the same thing.
Yes.
And we have different people there. We have a lot of people who bring really special animals. I mean, I was speaking to one guy.
The more serious collector.
Yeah, the more serious collector. We've got a guy there. He's the biggest ball python breeder in South Africa, and he has, when I say millions of rands worth of snakes, I'm not joking. And I spoke to him, what was his oldest breeding snake? And he said, well, he's had the one ball python now for 20 years.
Mm.
And every couple of years, she decides to take a year off and she refuses to breed whatsoever. Nothing can breed with her. She takes a year off and next year she'll breed again. So you will not have an animal which is stressed that will live for 20 years and still breed.
You see, Ona, isn't it almost the same as when we look at puppies and kittens, that
yeah.
you get reputable.
Yeah.
That word is a little bit, what does reputable yeah. mean? People who care about their animals, who are serious collectors, who would do anything. They've put a lot of time, money and effort in. Mm. But then you also get the backyard breeder,
yes,
let's call it that, the outside tank breeder, who will get a couple of beardy dragons.
And once the sale is made, they don't care whether
they
live or
care.
Die.
They're not interested.
I've been in this game now. We've been doing expos now for 14 years. You can imagine that we don't just basically say who wants to come to the expo and sell them a table. We basically send the people that we approve of.
Reputable.
Basically an invitation.
Ah.
Would you like to be at the expo?
Right.
If anybody else wants to be there, let us know. When we get somebody who we've never met before, we phone around and we go, hey, who's this guy? What do they do? What have they done?
Check him out.
Check him out, whatever. I mean, I'm connected with people that are at Maltons and Darrow and all these guys. So I can say to them, look, do me a favor, just go to this shop and have a look what it's like.
They
give me feedback and they say, listen, shop looks dodgy. We went in there, it smelled funny. They had 10 bearded dragons in one cage.
Okay,
that's
so
it. I don't want
them. Go and inspect.
You know, I don't want to throw my reputation away over a 600 rand table so that somebody can sell their rubbish there.
Sure.
It's not worth
for
it for
sure.
me.
Now, Ona, before we, you know, time goes so quickly in this studio, let's focus for a second on the two guys you've brought in today.
You've
got a bearded dragon here. He's absolutely gorgeous and Ona is about to take him out. Tell us a little bit about bearded dragons. They're very popular as pets right now.
It's the fashion.
They are, but the story behind bearded dragons is actually quite strange. Bearded dragons have never been exported out of Australia legally. They were smuggled out of Australia probably in the 70s. Ended up in Europe, and the Europeans, especially the Germans.
I'm sorry, look how he's listening. His little head's
like looking at us. Yeah.
They breed these things like flies. Those guys are really professional, and their standards are way above anything that we were at the time. So they bred lots of them and realized, but these are very prolific breeders. In the wild, they produce multitudes of babies, and these babies become food for a lot of other animals. But in captivity, we're raising about 90-95% of the babies, so we had a lot. Then we started getting all sorts of different colors, and some of them were smuggled into South Africa many years ago. I bought the first bearded dragon babies that were born, that were hatched here, and I paid 2,500 rand each.
Whoa.
You now pick them up for 250 rand each.
Yes, so easily.
But it's because they were so rare at the time, and the only reason why they're popular is because they will allow you to make a few mistakes. If the cage isn't perfectly hot, they will still eat. They're not as finicky as what people think they are, but there are too many people that do not know the minimum standards.
Yes.
They need minimum a hot spot, minimum a UV light or direct sunlight, minimum proper food, and they don't live in social groups. If you put two together and the one sees the other one's tail moving, he will nip it off. Or a toe or whatever.
Just bite it, regardless, male, female,
whatever. It doesn't matter. And the thing is why they do that is because everything looks like food to them. In the wild, they might live on 10 or 15 small insects at a time per day. So they need something to eat, nibble on all the time. And that is why they end up nipping toes and things. If you keep them exactly the same size and they're well fed, you'll see that they don't damage each other.
Okay.
And these rescued bearded dragons are sometimes a problem because I wouldn't want to take on a rescue bearded dragon for the simple reason that they quite often have parasites in them. They've been abused. They've got broken legs. All that.
Mm,
Sometimes I wonder if it isn't maybe better just to put them away and put them to sleep.
Well, I saw one that had no function from sort of waist down.
Yeah, but that's wrong. Then you're not doing it for the. You're doing it because it makes you feel good. You're not doing it because the best thing for the animal. I've had numerous animals which people have brought me where I know there's no chance for that animal to live a happy life.
Yeah. Yes.
You don't want an animal dragging a leg around. But I mean, we've all seen three-legged dogs. We've seen three-legged beardies.
Sure,
some of them you can. But when they get to that point where they are, their organs have taken a knock, they thin, then rather just put them to sleep.
So if you're wanting a beardie, a child will at some point say, I need a pet, mom. So it's either going to be a hamster or a goldfish, or these days the beardie seems to be the choice.
And research. If you do not research it, you are looking for a hiding.
And make sure you can afford the right enclosure, the right food, the lighting. Because the lighting, everything. Some of the lights, they are
very
not cheap.
Expensive.
Yeah,
they're very
expensive.
But then again, like the other little guy that we've got here is a leopard gecko. Now, leopard geckos don't need UV light because they come out at night. They're much cheaper to feed because they only you can feed them
crickets.
Mealworms.
Yes.
No, you can feed them mealworms for the rest of their lives and will make no difference to them.
Oh, really?
They live
dried
forever.
Dried or live mealworms?
Live mealworms, you put them in, yes. But they're easy to breed, so you can just have a box, put some bran in there, put some mealworms in there.
Oops.
No, you're not going to
help
them.
You there.
No, it's fine.
We've got a beardy sliding
and,
down.
These little leopard geckos live forever. Unless you're an idiot, you've got to hit them with a hammer to kill them. Mine lived for 32 years and bred when he was 30 years old.
Heavens.
So it's not, it's like a parrot. It's a lifetime dedication to them. And they make amazing little pets.
They're incredible.
They don't need much. And you get them in lots of different colors. Now, this guy's got no spots, despite him being a leopard gecko, because he was bred to have less and less spots.
So you do get different morphs.
You get lots
as well.
Of morphs with him. And the most expensive leopard gecko I saw last year was 52,000 rand.
Ooh, what?
So they can go from 250 rand to a sizable amount.
Yeah, because I've also seen at like this expo, there were about 450 somewhere there.
Yeah.
But then others went up 2,000, 3,000, 4,000.
But this little guy is about 15 centimeters, hey?
Yes.
Is this a fully grown? How big do they grow?
He's breedable. He's sexually mature, but he's not fully grown because reptiles never stop growing. You can imagine one of 30 years old is going to be a monster. He's going to be able to eat a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And they are. If the more you handle them, the more they basically will just sit in your hand and watch TV with you.
So they can make good pets,
but you have to research it. If you don't know what you're doing, stay away.
Don't get it.
It's as simple as that.
And the beardy?
Buy a Tamagotchi.
Yes. Much.
Every time they die, you reset them.
Yeah, you just reset.
No, you have to research animals. If you don't, then you're an idiot.
And it's not simple. Right. It's not right. And now tell me, the beardy, diet-wise? When they're babies, do they need crickets and stuff? Later veggies?
They like crickets, they like mealworms, they like veggies. But you can eventually teach them to eat basically pellets. You can buy beardy pellets.
I've seen that.
And you just put that in and
is that good for them? Or is it a processed
It keeps them alive
thing.
And would I want to eat McDonald's every day? No.
Exactly.
I would like to chase crickets though.
Right.
So I prefer to put in crickets and mealworms and all sorts of other stuff for them. And then depending on what's in season, I mean, when it's mulberry leaves are around, then I give them mulberry leaves, I give them mulberries, I give them strawberries, I give them all sorts of stuff that are in season.
Yes.
And they like that.
Is there anything they shouldn't eat that's bad for them?
There's certain things that you stay away from, things like avos and things with high iron. But for example, they love green peppers, all different colors. And every day you give them a different color and then they're all excited because their memory is not that hot. So they don't remember yesterday they had it, but this looks new. And they do get excited and everything. So they are very personable animals. And there's lots of other lizards that are just as nice. Some of the Legavans, we've got Australian Legavans, small ones, that are also excellent. But you need to spend time with them. It's like it's like having a really special cat or a special dog.
Yes.
It's not something that
you just leave them in a cage.
No, you can't just leave them in a cage. It's
I know that some people wonder why they aren't eating. And when my brother had his bearded dragon, they said he's not getting enough sun to digest his food.
Yes. So. Sun is very important. Not so much the sun, but the UV light from the sun. And also the temperature.
Mm.
a lot of the time their body is too cold to digest the food. So their core temperature needs to go up to over 30 degrees. So if you've only got a spotlight in there that takes them to 30 degrees, the skin is 30, but the inside of their body is not 30 degrees.
Ah.
So you need that. Plus, for them to take the calcium and turn it into bone, they need UV light. That's when you need to put in UV lights. Me, it's a lot easier. You build them a cage over weekends. You put them outside. You protect them from the elements. You protect them from birds and cats and all sorts of other stuff. And they run around in the sun.
Even in the winter?
Even in the winter. I mean, it's not that cold in the middle of the day here in winter. And you spend 3 hours in the sun on a Saturday and Sunday, and it makes up for whatever else they might be missing in their life.
So you could take your beardie out of its enclosure and make sure you got a safe other enclosure. Proper, and just let them straight in the full sun.
Yes, put them in there, but you need to give them a place where they can hide from the shade, all that sort of stuff. And also, you don't want them to have some bird come down and peck on them. And you obviously sit outside and you watch them while you're there. And that makes up for anything that might be lacking. But it doesn't mean your cage must be substandard. It just means you're giving them a little bit more. It's like some days we just want to sit in the sun. Some days they'd also just like to sit in the sun.
And it's more natural. Do they drink water?
Yes.
They do.
All of them drink water. You give them a little water bowl. Some of them will, a friend of mine's actually got a massive cage with a waterfall.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll actually climb to the top of the waterfall, slide down,
climb
out, lie in the sun. And when they get too hot, they'll climb to the top and slide down. And you can sit there and watch them doing this. And you think, there's something wrong with them, obsessive compulsive.
Yes.
And he says they only do it for a couple of months of the year and then they stop.
And then they stop.
And then the rest of the year everything's fine and then they start doing it again.
Do you need to bath them? Do you need nothing?
No,
like
none
that?
Of these animals that don't have fur, because they shed their skins, anything that they have on them they will shed.
So you don't need to bath them.
But
if they get
external parasites, obviously you want to treat them for that.
And are you handling before we go? I mean, if you go and you get one of these little baby ones, should you be handling it?
No, you shouldn't be handling a little baby one. If you want, you can put your hand in the cage, let him climb on your hand, and then feed him.
So that
he realizes your hand is a good place because he gets treats, and it's a nice way of getting him used to you so that eventually, like now, he'll just sit on my shoulder and he'll be happy. The problem is I don't like people driving through traffic with them on the shoulder because often there's just a shadow and they think it might be a bird of prey and they jump out of the window. I had one that used to sit on the dashboard because it was nice in the sun, and one of the window washers ran in front of a car and nearly got killed, so that stopped me from doing that. Yes, when you transport them, they must be safe, secure, and you don't want to disturb people who might not be used to these sort of animals. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things at the expo. We ask the people when they leave, please go straight home. Don't stop and do shopping because your car gets too hot.
Oh, right.
Like what we have with dogs and people closing them in cars.
It's the same thing applies.
Exactly the same with reptiles, and it's actually worse with them.
Oh, no, we, sadly, again, running out of time. Let's end quickly by telling us about your expo. Where can people find what dates?
It will be the 2nd and 3rd of May at Empress Palace. As you go in, you'll see the signage in there. And if you go in there, we expect to have about 6,500 reptiles and spiders and things for you to choose from. So anything you want, you'll probably find there. If you don't find it there, it's probably illegal or not in the country. Mm-hmm. And you get to speak to people that actually bred them. So if you've got questions, please ask them. If the guy doesn't want to answer you, go to his competition. And once they see that, they hate it and they will give you everything that you need to know. And that's a nice thing about the expo, having so many people in such close proximity. They do try to give you as much advice as possible.
So there's going to be a lot of education.
That's what we're trying to stress. And if you don't come right, look for me and I'll explain everything to you.
And you'll sort them out quickly.
It's really cheap though, hey? 40 rand an adult, 20 rand a child. Very cheap.
It's not to make money. It's to get people there and just make sure that they learn something.
Is this whole field of collecting reptiles, is it growing?
It is growing, but it's not growing in the right direction. Okay. We'd like more education out there as well.
Absolutely. Right.
And I just see one last point there. You're the biggest reptile expo in Africa. That's huge.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay.
Amazing.
So it's not this Saturday, next Saturday and Sunday, hey?
That's
definitely.
Awesome.
Definitely. Well, that's about it. That's all
Sharon,
we have time for.
We must just, with the last few seconds, announce the winner of our competition.
Oh, where is the winner?
The lucky winner. Her name is Rose.
Rose. Because I see there she said I just missed the question.
I just got a message from our producer. She
that
says
Rose
that
is
Rose
is
winner.
Well done, Rose. You can expect your beautiful Samsung very soon. Thank you for entering. And remember to listen to other shows because there's more up for grabs.
Oh, yeah. Half a million rands worth.
Absolutely. So we'll be back next Wednesday. We've got some exciting shows coming up again. And until we meet you again, have a great week.
CliffCentral.com.